It's been said that most people die at age 25 and wait to be buried at age 65. So the big question is this: how are entrepreneurs like us who believe in God and read the Bible preparing for the financial danger that the bankers and brokers do not want us to know about? How do we resist a life that's less than we are promised and hold on to our dreams so that we can live in fullness every day? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the secret. My name is Nate Scott, and welcome to the Life is Rich podcast.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? What's going on? My name is Nate Scott, author of Life is Rich, How to Create Lasting Wealth, which is a principle-centered, biblically-based leadership program focused on personal growth and entrepreneurship, specifically addressing the fact that 77 million baby boomers are retiring and facing a cash flow danger, that 66 out of 100 people age 65 earn less than $30,000 in retirement, that 47% of people say if they had a $400 emergency, they'd have to sell something or borrow money to address it, and 68% of people are living paycheck to paycheck. It's about how to think versus what to think. How to think versus what to think. And understanding that, that lets you know that you're literally just a thought away from creating whatever it is that you desire. Today is a very, very special conversation. I am delighted to be here today with Mr. Anthony Kimball. Anthony just has a phenomenal, phenomenal spirit about him. He has a great background, but it's more about the spirit. You know, leadership is to be caught versus being taught. I want you to make a note of that. Leadership is to be caught versus being taught. And I think that today what you guys are going to get from us as we engage in a conversation about the investor mindset, identifying your resources, as we talk about collective economics, as we speak about mentorship, and just touch on various subjects, I think what you'll walk away with today is an understanding that the American dream is alive and well. And whatever that may mean to you, you can have it if you'll simply invest the time to learn how to get it. And so just a little bit about Anthony's background, let me walk you through. Anthony Kimball is a recognized leader in Baton Rouge and is the founder and managing partner of Kimball Properties LLC, a privately held real estate investment development company. In addition to that role at Kimball Properties, Mr. Kimball is an avid mentor in his own youth basketball program, a serial entrepreneur, a dedicated social activist. He was born in Baton Rouge, attended Stanford University where he played football. He also graduated from Tulane with his MBA, specializing in real estate. And his primary objective is to teach the value of wealth building, property ownership, and financial literacy to individuals in the communities he grew up in, which have historically been disadvantaged. Man, just a tremendous background, and it ties directly into our strategic approach to closing the wealth gap. And so grab your pen and paper, and I'm going to ask one thing of you. If you'll lend us your ear, we'll give you our heart. So please make notes, drop comments, ask questions, and understand that if we tell you, you'll forget. If we teach you, you'll remember, but if we involve you, you'll learn. So please, please get involved. And so Anthony, welcome, welcome, welcome. What's going on?
I'm excited to be here today. Thanks for having me. Just so you know, in New Orleans today, I work and live between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. So in New Orleans today, I'm actually building a personal home here while we're adding a duplex to kind of the compound that we've built in the Bywater in New Orleans. So I've been meeting with contractors and my project manager all morning. So just, you know, trying to keep things rolling.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, man, I want to give them a complete story. So let's begin with your earliest recollection of getting involved in sports. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about how athletics have played into your overall development.
Man, I'm a lifelong athlete. I mean, since I could remember, you know, whether it was, you know, I primarily played basketball and football growing up. So, I mean, I started playing sports, you know, 6-7 years old on the organized, but even before that in the backyard You know, in the small town where my grandma lived in Morganza, Louisiana, my cousins, my uncles, you know, so sports was always a very, you know, integral part of our life. And I mean, from the type of community, you know, I grew up in, and I know, you know, just knowing your background and the relationship we've had, you know, substantial part of my life, for a lot of us, people that look like us, that athletic component is so important, because a lot of times that's like one of the ways we see to get out. And whatever you considers getting out. But I knew, you know, where I was from, Morganza, Baton Rouge, sports was one of the ways that I, you know, I saw, you know, a future for myself and to be able to achieve some of the things, you know. So sports was always an integral part of my life, because some of the only successful people I've seen from communities that looked like me were athletes.
Yeah, yeah, similar story. And that in the 10th grade of high school is when I made a decision that in order for me to have the degree of success that I desired, it was going to ball out into two different areas. Either it was going to be in business or real estate. Well, lo and behold, it ended up being in both, but it was about trying to find a way out, and athletics gave me the foundational standpoint. What position did you play in sports?
So played basketball, played point guard and shooting guard, football, played receiver, running back, at Stanford, played, ended up becoming a running back full time. So played on the offensive side of the ball. So, you know, grew up, you know, loving basketball, but ended up going to college, you know, on scholarship to play football.
And when you got to Stanford, how was that experience? Because it was completely different background. It was a new experience. So what did that look like for you?
I mean, I'm a Southerner. So, you know, going to the West Coast, you know, whether it was culture, whether it was food, you know, it was completely different. I tell people, you know, now, as you know, I'm in my 30s now, you know, Stanford was one of those places that I definitely appreciated while I was there. But, you know, I think you appreciate the greatness of, you know, of the people, you know, people around you that are trying to do great things daily. The older, you know, you appreciate the ambition people have, the, you know, and then seeing, you know, where some of these people life paths take them. But yeah, I mean, it definitely was a culture shock, to say the least, for myself going there, but excuse me, it taught me a lot. It taught me to adapt, taught me about new relationships, taught me, you know, about understanding different cultures. So, you know, it definitely was an eye-opening experience. And I think one of the biggest things it showed me was, I'll tell people a lot, was a different level of wealth than I'd ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember you shared the story about how, as a freshman, you were thrust in a leadership role. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. I mean, I started, at Stanford as a redshirt freshman, you know, went into camp, coming into my redshirt freshman year, sophomore year academically, as the fourth running back, but ended up by game one, started the game against Navy, our first game of the year, and ended up, till I got hurt, started the first 6-7 games of that year. So it was one of those things that, you know, even I wasn't a lifelong football player that was, you know, had all these expectations for going to college. I had parents that was like, hey, you know, had expectations because we were so involved in football, I mean, so involved in basketball growing up. But it definitely taught me, you know, like how to adjust and, you know, that, like, you know, no matter, you know, how you see yourself, sometimes you are put in that lead and you have to, you know, hold yourself accountable and be willing to, you know, take what comes with that. You know what I mean? I've always wanted to, what, you know, big in my life is that I never shy from a challenge. I think, you know what I mean? Instead of, you know, I try to hold myself accountable and figure out ways that I can get better and meet the expectations that are, you know, put on me. You know, I'm a true believer in whom much is given, much is expected. So with that being said, you know, I try to always step up to the plate when opportunities are presented, you know, for me.
Yeah, you've done a great, great job. And I love the fact that experience that you gained prepared you for all the other things that are out front. And it's really about taking on that role and taking that responsibility of recognizing that everyone doesn't have the placement, if you will, to be able to then make certain moves. And so wherever it is that we're placed at, we're supposed to grab that so that we can then in turn take those resources and then put them to work. You know, you spoke about your parents and how engaged they have been throughout your entire life. Share with me about the experience of seeing what they did in order to ensure that they kept that consistency of being there and being able to observe your continued progress dating back to when you were made that transition to Stanford.
Looking back, you know, one thing, you know, that I realized now that I really try to apply this to my life, that my parents were intentional. With, you know, the experiences I had, you know, what schools I went to, my involvement in sports, what my expectations were, you're going to be, you know, I mean, my parents told me earlier, like, hey, we're not, you know, we're not at the level financially that we're probably going to be able to pay for you for college. So, you know, this sports or your academics is going to be what, you know, allows you to have that opportunity. So what we're going to do is give you the best opportunities we can academically, you know, and with sports. So, you know, and my parents, I think what they did a great job, you know, was also explaining me their journey. My parents, neither one of them graduated from college, but they never stopped trying to progress in life and getting better. And, you know, like I always tell people, it's funny that like my parents, you know, are so such different people now or at this point in their life than what I remember growing up. And like, you know, I'm definitely, you know, proud of them for, you know, all the progressing that they've continued to do. And it's one of those things that like has, you know, they built a great example for me. But, you know, I think the biggest thing that they was intentional. And whether it's personal relationships, business relationships, you know, my cousins, you know, people I think are talented people in my tribe that I value. I try to be intentional about the value I add to people's lives.
Yeah, yeah, that intentionality, because truly, if you're not growing, you're dying. And the evolution is all about just staying course, putting one foot in front of the other. I remember coming in for your high school graduation and then having the time with your dad and just laying out, thinking about the future and thinking about what things need to be done in order to continue to move down that path. And I remember he shared with me the questions you would have about what are you doing here and how are you getting here? Mm-hmm. And that kind of gave you some early insight, but I wonder, did you really understand those moves that were being made right then? And if not, then when did you say, maybe there's something to this real estate stuff?
I think I will say I had a grasp at it early, but I think part of it was because I saw my parents, you know, own a record company. I saw my parents own a music store. I saw my dad do the lawn care thing. I've seen them have some success. I've seen them have failures. So I understood ownership. You know what I mean? And even, you know, some of the things I'd seen through my family's ecosystem of, you know, we had people that did, you know, great things, but we had some people that did some things, you know, selling drugs, whether that was, you know what I mean? And, you know, I understood, you know, how society viewed those things and, you know, the consequences that came with those things. And I understood the reasons my parents kept me away from those things. But with all of these things, I understood like the business part of it and how ownership, supply and demand, how you take stuff, money and reinvest it. And I want to say, you know, because of, you know, my relationship with you at an early age, my parents, people like Collis Temple, one of my best friends, Garrett Temple, his dad, who was a real estate developer, and then in college working at, you know, private equity companies and stuff like that. It gave me, you know, a understanding at an early age of, you know, what business was, you know, and I think then what Stanford did for me was show me this business at a different level and what this business looks like when, you know, if we've been around 50, 60, 70 years and we have, you know, processes and systems put in place. And, you know, now we're talking about putting trust in place, you know, trust funds for our kids, you know, life insurance policies and stuff. So what it did for me was show me, okay, this is a start, but this is what scaling up looks like.
Yeah, it's absolutely one of those things about standing on the shoulders and then moving forward. That's exactly the story about being able to create generational wealth. It really begins and ends with the mindset and those things that we get exposed to. Because once the mind has been exposed to something, it can never shrink back and go back to where it was at before that. So we moved on to graduating from college, and then those times come when there's the opportunity, the possibility of going to the league. Talk to me about what your thoughts were around that and when you realize that that wasn't going to be the path for you?
Yeah, I mean, and the thing for me was, you know, professional sports wasn't the end all be all for me ever. You know what I mean? And it's crazy now. You know, I remember being at the combine and, you know, GMs talking to me about, you know, my background, my intelligence, and that, like, you know, I had other opportunities outside in football. And, like, you know, I don't know how much our, you know, listening base understands, but, like, football coaches, GMs, they want football to be your end all be all, because typically that's the guy that goes the hardest. And, you know, at that time, when I was getting those questions, you know, I would, you know, I said the right thing of, you know, I don't know football, I love it. Like, you know, I don't know what, but, you know, really in the back of my mind, I understood that, like, hey, like, you know, my head hurts sometimes, you know, when, like, you know, I had multiple years in college where, you know, I had season ending injuries. So, you know, I also value the crazy thing, my senior project is in college was on concussions and, like, the impact of, you know, so football, you know, I wasn't a kid that grew up loving football. I was a basketball guy growing up. So, you know what I mean? I was one of the things that, like, I was going to get all the value I could out of it. But then when it didn't make sense anymore, I wasn't going to be a guy training for years and years just waiting on this opportunity. I knew I could make money doing other things, and I probably would enjoy those other things. You know, I think some of, for me, the people around me, my tribe, you know, making people proud, that has always been an important factor for me. So I think for me, some of the things was I wanted to make other people proud. I wanted the other people to feel like what it felt like to be in an NFL locker room. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, I knew I could be successful without, you know, football. And I mean, I've shown that, you know what I mean? But for me, I do appreciate all the experiences I had growing up, all the mentors, all the, you know, I'm a person, I always say I'm definitely, you know, wasn't self-made. You know, I mean, I had people, you know, whether it wasn't always, you know, investing their money, but I had a lot of people invest their time, invest their, you know, resources, you know, the experiences I was able to have. And I'm thankful for all those, because what that really did give me, you know, at that pivotal time was I did have options to do, you know, different things. And I think, you know, being able to dedicate yourself to something and, you know, get the full potential out of something, you know, it's very, it's important. But I do think also giving yourself optionality, or I look at it as ways to, you know, bring in different revenue streams. I think that's important.
Yeah. It's critical. In fact, you said something that I can definitely relate to, because on my end, for example, with being in the military at 19, when I walked perimeter during Desert Storm, I said, Lord, if you allow me to make it back, I'll never waste a day of my life. It was in that moment that I really understood time. I mean, we all have the same 1,440 minutes per day. And when you subtract out the time for working, sleeping, commuting, and the time it takes you to do what you have to do each and every day of your life, most people are left with just 1 to 2 hours remaining to do what they want to do. And then the question is, do they have the money to do it? Well, as a teenager, I was faced with the situation of not knowing if I was going to make it back. And so in that moment, I knew that the military wasn't going to be life for me. Although I went to West Point after Desert Storm, I went to the academy with the mindset of I'm career by day, which means that I already had an exit plan. I already knew that if I was going back, if I ever had a family, then I would get out. I would get out of the military, because I already had experience through lives of older people, what it looked like to have people caring about you and worrying about you. And I didn't want that, because I want to be all in. So I branched infantry, ranger, all those things to be able to go full speed, but I knew that it wasn't my be end all. And that's the same thing. And one of those things I like to, in mentoring, especially athletes, I try to talk to them about, let's ensure that you recognize that you are the asset, that you are more than an athlete, that you have infinite potential. And all you gotta do is take that skill set and apply it in a very intentional way. And it's unlimited to what you're able to do, because you've already demonstrated a history of doing the right things that allows you to have those discipline, that habit that can be applied to something else. And so shifting into where we're at today and the work that you have now really honed in on after getting your initial start in the PR world, in the sports marketing world, And now that you, when you made that commitment to go full blast into real estate, you made a decision to go to Tulane. Talk to me about the decision to go there and what was that experience like for you?
I mean, going back to Tulane for me was, and I actually went to architecture school, and my degree is sustainable real estate development, which is a mixture of finance and design. So, but it was actually, my degree was through the MSRED degree was actually, through the architecture school. But with that being said, I understood networks. And for me, I understood I wanted to, you know, tap into that Tulane network in New Orleans. I thought New Orleans was really where I was gonna, you know, scale my development company. So part of it was about gaining, that network. On the flip side of that, I think part of me going back and get my graduate degree was looking for a validation that I don't think I needed. I had a project while I was in college where me and my group was up against my professor group as far as RFP for the city of Baton Rouge for a project that my group ended up winning. So, you know, I'm literally having a guy teach me that, you know, and I mean, thank you, he was a great teacher, learned a lot from him. But, you know, what I realized that, you know, I was capable of doing what I was already doing and scaling up, and that, like, you know, a lot of the value from this college was the network. And that, you know, this validation, I thought, you know, by saying, hey, I have a master's degree, it was something that I didn't need. But I also understood, you know, with my social network, my group of friends, my tribe, you know, being able to tap into Wall Street guys, being able to tap into Silicon Valley, being able to tap into professional athletes, that I have a niche situation. So with that being said, where my focus then became for my master's degree was, hey, these kids I mentor, this might be a necessity for you, you know, for some of the things you guys want to look to accomplish. So, hey, let me show you, if I'm able to work full time and still dedicate myself to getting this degree, you're capable of doing your best in school and playing ball, whether it's at a high school level or whether it's at a college level. So, you know, that became my motivation as something was setting an example for them. But I do think I was looking for a validation that I didn't really need.
And what's interesting that is, if you had talked to me before you went to school, the question I would have asked you would have been, why? Mm-hmm. So, like you are speaking of, I address that validation piece on the front side when I'm mentoring people. Because my thing has always been play to your strengths and recognize that your network does have those resources that may be needed. And so don't make the decisions because you're trying to get through doing what other people are trying to do as if they're, when you already are doing. It's about the doing. And so that whole idea of having degrees and being limited speaks to a lot of things that I'm so excited about what you're tapping into with getting people reconditioned and understanding trades and understanding where you can be placed. Because my thing is in the same vein is that, yes, I have the degree from West Point. Yes, I have the MBA. Yes, I've got finance ran from Georgetown. But at the end of the day, how am I leveraging that in order to open up other doors? It's recognizing when you have the responsibility that comes with all that's been designed uniquely for you. That right there is puts you in a unique and a powerful position, especially when you understand networking and able to tap into different networks and being able to be a bridge. I think about right now what's happening with Rich Paul. I think about Jay-Z and the new deal that was just made with Moet. It's those type of opportunities that open up. And then it's a matter of, okay, have you gained enough experiences around you so that you can now say, how can I be a person of value and positive influence within that space? So you're now honed in on the buying the block piece. Mm-hmm. Walk me through what do we have going on, because I'm excited about the whole effort around collective economics and closing this wealth gap. So talk to me.
So, real estate developing. So real estate's the product that, you know, we're centered around. So with that being said, you know, impact is, you know, huge, and, you know, for me, for my tribe. So with that being said, you know, two of the biggest impacts I look at that we're really focusing on is housing and education. with the real estate development being rebuilding the, not only rebuilding the buildings, but rebuilding the people. We're working in historically Black neighborhoods in Baton Rouge right now, one being South Baton Rouge, one being Scotlandville and North Baton Rouge. And what we're doing, you know, and what I look at, I guess, stepping back, what I look at my purpose is in the Baton Rouge ecosystem. I could be in New York, I could be in Miami, Atlanta, wherever, doing development, working, you know, for some, you know, company where I know I'm going to get a check every week, you know, whether that's bank, consulting, whether that's private equity, whatever. But what was key to me and what I look as my purpose is being from Baton Rouge and working in these de-invested Black communities over the last 30, 40 years is my purpose is to bring resources into those communities that you typically wouldn't see. And that goes back to my network of Wall Street guys, Silicon Valley guys, pro athletes like Richard Sherman, Garrett Temple that have invested in my funds. And for us is, you know, we're really looking to build neighborhoods that accommodate all people and also use this real estate development as a way to rebuild the people within the neighborhood. So whether that's, you know, workforce development, working with the city as far as workforce development programs. A big piece of what we're doing right now is we just launched with my partner, Julian Garden and Tevin Wade, a How to Buy the Block series. So it's howtobuytheblock.com. So a teaching vertical really is experience where, you know, whether you want to interested in new construction projects, whether you're interested in rehab projects, whether you're interested in commercial, bigger commercial projects, we're giving people a way to follow us through our projects and learn about what we're doing, you know, each week and how, you know, what are the different pieces. Last week in our Wednesday night class, we taught on social capital and, you know, financial capital. So talking people about, you know, that table influence, the people in their network, how can they use their, you know, connections with local government or, you know, stuff to really build out their real estate development company. So, you know, teaching is huge for us and Buy Back Baton Rouge, which is our real estate development fund, where we're really, you know, people in our network, whether family, friends or, you know, people we don't know through crowdfund, we're allowing them to invest into this, you know, our real estate projects in Baton Rouge and pay them a return. So we have some equity investors, we have some debt investors. So, you know, those are, you know, two biggest things, you know, or three, you know, I'll say that we're working on this year is, you know, our buildings, our real estate development company, Buy Back Baton Rouge, our teaching platform, you know, howtobuytheblock.com. And then we have our workforce development piece that we're really using, you know, our real estate development to teach guys about trades. You know, we're still in development stages. You know, how do we, you know, develop, you know, tradesmen? How do we, you know, everybody's path is not going to be mine to go to college. So how do we, you know, at 18 to 23, take people from, you know, finishing college with $50,000 in debt until, hey, now you're 23 and you have $50,000 to invest. That's the transition we're looking to help people make. And we're using all these pieces together to build out an ecosystem to redevelop, you know, to revitalize buildings, to, you know, to build content that's going to teach people about group economics, entrepreneurship, and how to develop real estate. And then we have our workforce development piece that, you know, we're going to look to train people, you know, and then not only just train them, we're going to give them, you know, give them jobs through our construction company. I think that's the biggest piece that we've kind of lost. And, you know, a big thing for us is how can we rethink education? How can we, you know, like I said, figure out where you're not 22, 23 graduating with debt now looking for a job. How can I teach you something, get you a job, and then you're 22, 23, and now you have a lump sum to go invest and figure out what your passion is. And I'm not telling you to be an electrician forever, but if I'm telling you, if you can be 24, 25 and have 60 to 100,000 to invest and build out what your passion is, hey, you know, now you're not getting educated, but, you know, ending up in the hole. So, you know, those are our major platforms that, you know, we're really working to develop.
Yeah. And everything you just said, it speaks to even how I parent. You know, Nadia now is 16 and Trey is 15. And though I have a background that touches those traditional things, I still raised them with the idea of, what do you want? My question, and here's the question for those of you out there listening, is, do you want a job, a career, or a life? Do you want a job, a career, or life. And depending on what it is that you decide will guide which recommendation I'm going to give to you, because it's all about looking at that resource of time and recognizing that it's simple for you to begin with the end in mind, to think it through about what is it that you want in the end state. And then instead of looking at what everyone else is doing, ask yourself, do you really want the outcome that they have? I mean, as a guy that's a former financial advisor that went into the business after making my first million, I went in there looking around and realized that within a week of being in the business that my background experiences didn't matter, because it wasn't a job of actually making people money. It was a sales job. And that was very interesting because I saw people not actually having their numbers run, which meant that it made sense that 68% of people were living paycheck to paycheck, and why 66 out of 100 people aged 65 earned less than $30,000 in retirement, and why people were still doing the same old broken system. Now you're in a unique position to be able to speak directly to your audience, and we can together start to change up the mindset and start putting people into position to start challenging status quo and start saying, being inquisitive and maybe breaking some of those social norms. Mm-hmm. I know one thing you and I have spoken about before is those social norms that are oftentimes dispelled within a broken church system. Talk to me about some of the things that you have seen, experienced when it comes to your community development and the things that were lacking that made you say, you know what? You guys got an option. We can help you to start doing some things where you can actually start seeing some type of returns versus just talking faith, but actually being able to walk faith.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, my partner, Julian Garden, he has his establishment, the financial kind of financial church. I'm definitely a very spiritual person. And it's, I always tell people, for me, the how I look at it is, you look at a lot of, other races in their communities, the center of their community is the bank. When we look at the center of the Black community for the last, really since the civil rights era, and you can, you probably could say before that, the center of our community is really the church. And the church played a critical role, especially civil rights movement, uniting people. But the kind of, the kind of interesting piece now that we have is we have a ton of churches in our community. Meaning that, people, banks and, especially white establishments were willing to fund church and help, these churches, get established. But now the circulation of the dollar is not happening in our community. So, it's one of those things like, hey, we were giving you, we'll give you guys, whatever ways you can to explore your faith. But financially, this funding, we're pulling all that out of the community. And, we're going to strategically, whether it's redlining, some of these other things, we're not going to keep funding out of your community. And I think, it's just time for us to just rethink some of these institutions and how they truly benefit us. We have churches that are huge landowners. We have churches, I know COVID has, terribly impacted churches and some of the financial reserves they have. But, we need to figure out how to, partner with these establishments that have, great tax exemptions because they're churches, and figure out how we use that to develop our communities. So how can we tap into grants and, other government money because of this tax exemption? And now how can we bring some private dollars to that where now, there's some type of return for the church? Can we set up a fund where the congregation is part of this and they're getting some type of return on their, they're giving, and I think it's just some of the things that we're not, totally sure what this path, but I've been excited that some of the pastors that I've talked to that they're open to this. And I think it's one of the reasons, with COVID now that they have to figure things out. Congregations are not going up right now. In size. So, my thing is trying to take, these churches, the ecosystem they've already created, the assets that they already typically, in a lot of places been donated over the years. And now how can we truly use this to add value to communities that, people that look like us?
You hit it right on the head. And the bottom line is it is about rethinking. It's about really getting beyond the rhetoric of the repeating things, but actually starting to walk faith versus talk faith. And that's why I wrote Life is Rich, How to Create Lasting Wealth. You know, that evolved because of my vow and saying, Lord, if you allow me to make it back, I'll never waste a day of my life. My name is Nathaniel, which means God's gift. And so my life has been a commitment of giving myself away in service to others. And in doing so, that means really standing firmly on God's word and recognize it as truth, regardless of what denomination and what you, who you serve, but the understanding that we are aligned in regards to this something, some type of higher power. Mm-hmm. And then from there, being able to say, if that's true, if you believe that, then act as if you already have it all, because you truly do. It's truly right there in your grasp. So now the question is, do you have enough faith to walk it out? Because when you have faith, then that really is a representation of your hope. Mm-hmm. And hope in the future is what gives you power in the present. But we got to bridge the gap with understanding. Miles Monroe says that knowledge is information. Understanding is comprehension.
I think another
wisdom is applied knowledge. So
another, you know, gap, you know, we have to feel is all of us, you know, realizing the creator that's within all of us, you know what I mean? And what we're capable of when, you know, you put your mind to it and you truly, you know, work to connect those dots, you know, and it doesn't typically, I know, you know, we live in this microwave generation where we want things to happen as quick as the microwave warms our food, but that's not typically how, you know, what leads to success. You know, and I think too, is that we all have to realize that there's a creator in all of us, and, you know, being able to tap into that. But I think another part of it too, is, you know, just looking at our communities, sometimes we're pressed with so many worries, so many things stacked against us. And that's why, you know, group economics, you know, and I mean, a lot of the things you instilled in me, you know, and you're going back to being intentional. I think you were one of the first people that really, like, you know, push that idea with me, you know, and you're talking to me of some of the things you're able to accomplish. Hey, you know, nephew, looking, I was able to buy this, you know, I bought this apartment, I got this, you know, car, you know what I mean? And not that material things matter, but it was, you know, you showing me that, hey, this is what I want, and I'm going to be intentional about getting that. And I think too, is that that's something that we all have to, like, really discover in all of us, is, and then be intentional about, you know, how to accomplish that. And I'm just going back to my family, while I'm so intentional about this next generation and, you know, having real estate, having businesses, because things like mortgages, you know, where I'm going to work, you know what I mean? Like car note. I mean, that's honestly stuff I don't want people in my family and my tribe to even worry about, because if I'm not worried about how I'm gonna a mortgage, and I know my family, you know, has houses in Baton Rouge, New Orleans, that, like, hey, if I want to do different things there, like, you know, long as I operate in the right way and with integrity, that, like, these, all these, you know, resources will be opened up to me. That allows me to focus that bandwidth on that creator within me and being able to accomplish some of these things. My kids are gonna be trust fund babies, you know what I mean? But it's going to be, you know, it's going to be structured out, and, you know, they'll have to prove their worth, and, you know, they'll have responsibilities and things they should be accountable. And but those resources will be open to them, that some of these things that we typically have to worry about in the Black community, they won't have to worry about. And they'll be able to focus that bandwidth on, you know, what they're passionate and what they're able to create.
Yeah. My decision leaving the military, I knew, again, because of that understanding of time, that I wanted to be that dad that was around whenever that was going to be. And when I was blessed enough to have a child, the work that I put forth beforehand in preparation for whenever that was going to be gave me an opportunity to make a decision. You see, I had that window of time when I was transitioning from the military of 90 days. And that's when I pulled the trigger on a simple concept that I'm always talking to people about, because it changed my life. And it was just simply information that is accessible to everyone. And that's just understanding the flow of money difference between the poor, the middle class, and the wealthy. The fact that the poor go income to expenses out the window. The middle class go income to liability, has an expense out the window. But that each one of us, with the creator inside of us, with us being the original asset, the thing that can go up in value by us just pouring into it, goes income to asset, to create income to asset, to create more income, beginning with self. And so my desire, my passion, my commitment is about getting everyone to realize that you are the asset. If you're listening here today, understand that, as Anthony just spoke about, that the creator within you, and what you got to do is you got to then foster it. Pour into yourself, work on your physical health, work on your mental health. It's really a simple foundation. I go spiritual, mental, emotional, relational, physical, and financial. And those things then walk right into place. And so with those proactive steps, then what happens is you have the opportunity to start to look at those resources and say, well, you know what? What can I bring to the table? What can I bring to the table in order to be a contributor to this thing that has a greater calling? Because money is not the issue. It's the thought. And the work that you guys are doing with not only building buildings, but also building people is going to be game changing, generationally speaking. And the complement to that, the things I cover in Life is Rich is dealing with the fact that we have leadership as the answer, the cash flow danger. It happened to me. Becoming an entrepreneur, choosing the right entity, raising capital, asset protection, protecting financial privacy, reducing your taxes, retirement planning, residual income, retirement planning, estate planning, and Life is Rich. You guys are walking it out. And the things that you're going to do are going to truly, truly, truly move people wherever they start, because we can start teaching those principles at any time.
And I mean, I think that's a big part of it, is that we need to start teaching those principles. I mean, if your kid can learn to play Fortnite, he can learn what a financial statement is. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, it's just, and even some of those things, you know, even though I direct the sports program, you know, sports for me is just the carrot to, you know, bring some of these kids in and be able to work with other things. And also the ones that are able to make this, you know, substantial wealth. How do we truly use this to make this generational, instead of, you know, because you never were taught these, you know, proper habits, proper things on how, you know, because no one in your family ever had, you know, this type of money. You typically, if you just don't know, you don't know. And then, you know, you're going to surround your people. It's just, you know, the Black athlete is a phenomenon in itself that, you know, I could discuss, you know, all day. But, you know, for me, it's like, hey, how can I teach some of these things early and still, you know, stay a mentor and help these kids, you know, whether it is sports or whether it's business, be able to accomplish, you know, things with his wife and continue that cycle. I think, you know, the biggest thing for me is building cycles, breaking cycles and building cycles. So, you know, even as something, you know, with sports, you know, that's what I use for that. But even going back to that, I tell people, you know, with our kids, if we dedicate that 4 hours a day that we have, you know, taking little John John, that's going to be 5'3", because mama 4'11", and daddy 5'5". You know, you talking about you're going to have a pro basketball player. Man, go take that 4 hours and spend it and learning, you know, on some STEM. You know what I mean? Learning, you know, how to code, you know, those different things. And I think we just have to be more intentional. You know what I mean? It's like, just because I played sports and that's what my mama did with me. Hey, like, if my genetically, like, a lot of times kid doesn't have a chance to make it. So, like, hey, like, let's make sure we're being intentional and, like, being realistic with these kids. Like, hey, if we're going to do team sports, I'm going to tell you the reasons we're doing it. Stop telling these kids at 7, 8, 9 years old that, you know, you want to be a pro basketball player. You know what I mean? Because, like, for 99.8% of kids, that is literally unrealistic. You know what I mean? And it's like, I don't want to, you know, being my chances of being successful in the same percentage as, like, winning the damn lottery. You know what I mean? Like, no, I'm going to set myself and give myself optionality. And, like, hopefully that optionality turns into different revenue streams.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, as we're coming to a close, we'll talk about some things that as you continue to go down that path, everyone that's listening in, I want you to really walk away with some real themes. And I hope that you will engage and tell us really the value that you're getting from what we're sharing. Understand that there's a plan, there's mentorship and support. And the key is that continual education, but it's the right education. It's being intentional. And so I'm going to share something with you to hope to have you to really think about what it looks like to be very intentional. It's daily habits done daily build character. I'm your constant companion. I'm your greatest helper or heaviest burden. I will push you onward or drag you down to failure. I'm completely at your command. Half of the things you do, you might as well turn over to me, and I will do them quickly and correctly. I'm easily managed. You must be firm with me. Show me exactly how you want something done, and after a few lessons, I will do it automatically. I'm the servant of great people and the laws of all failures as well. Those who are great, I have made great. Those who are failures, I have made failures. I'm not a machine, though. I work precision of a machine plus the intelligence of a person. You may run me for profit or run me for ruin. It makes no difference to me. Take me, train me, be firm with me, and I will place the world at your feet. Be easy with me, and I will destroy you. Who am I? I am habit. Anthony, as we're rounding out, talk to me about habits and the habits that you have right now that you think are key to your overall success.
Man, I mean, habits, are big on everything, you know, that, you know, I do, you know what I mean? And two is like, as the company grows, my tribe grows, you know, the habits, my leadership is more important because, you know, it then becomes a thing of like, people are watching, even when I don't know people are watching. So it's critical for everything I do to be conscious of that, that, you know, I'm leading people and I'm setting an example for those around me, you know, whether it's people within my circle or people who are just watching me from afar through social media that aspire to do what I do. You know, and I'm conscious of that. And I'm accountable. I take that, you know, responsibility. I don't take it lightly, you know, and it excites me. But, you know, too, it's like, you know, me challenging myself on, I think the biggest piece for me now is me to challenge those, some of those habits that I've built that are not the best, you know, whether it's, you know, being more organized, you know what I mean? Because my organization alone, as I bring more people into my organization, like it leads them, you know, it's always a catch up for them. But if I'm, you know, where I need to be now, that flows downhill and, you know, everybody follows the lead, you know, that I'm setting. So I think, you know, the biggest thing for me now is challenging myself to the things I don't do or I can improve and in being willing to hold myself accountable and prove those things. And also realizing, you know, the things I don't do well or I might not be best at and be able to delegate those things and hand those things off to people who do those things better than me, even though, you know, it's my company. You know, I'm not great at everything and I need to be able to say, hey, you know, this is what I don't do well. And can I do something, you know, to hand this off to somebody? Hey, and this is something that I have no option but to do well because it sets an example. It puts everybody else in place. Okay, well, you just have to be accountable and fix that, that, you know, now that you're leading everyone in the right direction.
Awesome. Awesome. Got any questions? Anything that you'd like me to answer or address or anything?
Man, I definitely just appreciate you for, you know, all of you did for me and, you know, the inspiration you've been, the experiences, the lessons, you know, you've taught me, you know, and I mean, like I said, you know, and appreciate, you know, when I do call, you know, you being there, you know, as a mentor and stuff like that. So, you know, definitely appreciate you having me today, you know, to be able to share my story, you know, beyond grateful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And where can they get you? Where can they connect with you on the different social media platforms?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Instagram, B_AnthonyKimble, AnthonyKimble, Kimble, KimBLE. Definitely go to our website, howtobuytheblock.com. That's where you really learn about our teaching vertical. So, yeah, definitely, you know, anything you want to learn on, you know, our teaching vertical, what we're doing as far as development, go to howtobuytheblock.com.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, hey, listen, once again, I hope you guys have gotten value from today. Please drop a note. Let us know. Ask any questions so we can continue on with the dialogue. I hope that you're very clear about our focus and how we're working to be intentional about changing this wealth gap. You know, the typical Black family has a net worth of $17,150. The typical white family has a net worth of $171,150. We just want to make sure that we start to close that gap by bringing resources together, beginning with this thing right here, that mind, because we truly can go out here and have all that we desire. We just got to have the right plan, mentorship, and support. For a copy of Life is Rich, How to Create Lasting Wealth, please go to lifeisrichtoday.com and we'll get that out to you. This is Nate Scott with Anthony Kimble. Until next time, take care and be blessed.
Thank you for listening to the Life is Rich podcast. I'm your host, Nate Scott. Remember, if I tell you, you'll forget. If I teach you, you'll remember. But if I involve you, you'll learn. One way to get involved is to rate, subscribe, and leave feedback on iTunes by answering the question, what did you like best about what you heard? One of the problems faced by Christian entrepreneurs striving for success is having an alliance with like-minded people working together for a common, definite objective. Would you like to join a community of Life is Rich soldiers? If so, please rate and subscribe to the Life is Rich podcast on iTunes and text GROWTH to 904-204-0846 for the link and this month's free book. Again, please rate and subscribe to the Life is Rich podcast and text GROWTH to 904-204-0846. Again, my name is Nate Scott. Take care and be blessed.